This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode, In the Name of Science. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Places up north and up high are impacted by climate change in a big way, so everything there could be changing at a rapid pace. This summer, some biologists set out to discover all they could about these regions before it's too late. Molly Siegel joined them at the beginning of their field season.
Is that the one you're thinking?
Yeah. You know what? You know, we're all right here.
Okay.
Yeah.
A helicopter drops me off at the top of a mountain with three biologists. Up here, the scientists gather as much as they can before heading down to base camp below. In one direction, the mountain peaks seem to go on forever. It's sunny, but at times chilly enough for a jacket, even though it's mid-July. It's not a bad spot to have to work for the day, despite the wind, which is sometimes so strong I can barely stand up. It rips some paper out of botanist Ken Marr's hands. He takes it in stride.
Wind is a real bother today.
Ken is the botany curator at the Royal BC Museum in Victoria, British Columbia. He's digging up samples of alpine plants to add to the museum's collection. Ken and the other scientists are figuring out what lives up here, kind of like what Charles Darwin did in the Galapagos. It sort of surprises me to realize scientists don't have complete records of all of the species and where they live here in British Columbia. But these places are hard to reach, so some of the work just hasn't been done.
There's a whole lot that isn't known about the distribution of plants in the province, especially the alpine plants.
Ken is one of five scientists here with the Royal BC Museum, looking for the small stuff, like alpine plants and spiders. Darren Copley uses what looks like a giant straw attached to a long tube to suction up a spider.
So we'll suck her up. Put her in the ethanol.
The tube has a filter, so the spider doesn't go pinging all the way up. Darren is looking for some of British Columbia's tiniest spiders, the ones that are usually overlooked. Lots of them are here, but hiding under rocks.
So most of our spiders are kind of 2 to 3 millimeters long.
Do you basically just collect everything you see?
Yeah, it's sort of a mass killing spree. It's the only thing we don't like about what we do. But we're not collectors for the sake of collecting. It's not like just hockey cards. This is for research, and it's a voucher. It's a specimen showing that it was here at this point in time.
We know more about the larger life here, like the grizzly bears, or even the nearby caribou herds, which local First Nations are working hard to protect. But Darren and the other scientists are creating a baseline of the plant, insect, and spider presence here. And that groundwork lets other scientists come along and ask more questions, like how are humans, climate, or industry affecting this place? Or maybe a scientist will want to do some research about one of these tiny spiders. So that baseline needs to be in place in order to do all of that other stuff.
Spiders like cool
better,
you know? So
yeah.
Maybe we'll be better when we're in a bit shadier spot.
That's Claudia Copley. She manages the Royal BC Museum's entomology collection.
There's a real spider.
Claudia and Darren work together at the Royal BC Museum, and they're also married. Sometimes the spiders they find have never been documented in British Columbia or Canada or even in North America. And other times they find spiders that are completely new to science. But she collects insects too.
Oh, I like that guy. That's a click beetle. We do try to collect everything we see.
After hours of work, it's late afternoon when we near the ridge of the mountain.
Oh, did you hear yelling?
Claudia thinks she hears yelling from over the ridge in the valley, where the rest of the group is working near base camp.
I think there's probably a bear. They're behaving like it's a bear.
They are?
Yeah.
Well, find it. You've got binocular.
Darren just thinks they're behaving as though they're trying to shoo something away. And there aren't very many things you'd want to do that to. Black or grizzly? Oh, I see them. They're in the little light area above the rock outcrop.
We see a mother grizzly bear and her two yearlings. They're meandering through the valley. Darren radios one of the scientists, Rob Bennett, who's down at camp.
Rob, it's Darren. Can you guys see them?
Yeah, we can see three. We have a mom and two cubs west of the camp. Are you on the ridge line?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on the ridge. We heard some yelling, so we came over to the edge.
The bears are kind of sauntering away from camp, except one of the cubs is stubborn and heading toward camp. Darren suggests we yell at the same time to help scare them away for good.
Go, bear! Go, bear!
Go!
Go, bear!
Go!
The bears run out of the valley. Claudia and Darren decide their collecting is over. This part of British Columbia has a lot of grizzly bears. We shouldn't be surprised to see them. But it still shakes us up a bit. The easier route down to camp is where the bears ran off, so we opt for a steeper slope instead. The next morning, we briefly forget about the bears over breakfast.
It's good coffee, Rob. I'm sure something you've done too is good, Ken.
That day, we hike up to a place with a view of a different valley. The mountain we're on is lush and green, dotted with limestone and large patches of snow and ice. It's mostly alpine meadow, covered in mosses, lichens, and tiny plants and flowers that have carved out a niche here, where it's cold and high up. I asked Claudia why northern and high elevation places like this one are some of the most sensitive to a changing climate.
The species that occur at these elevations are adapted for these cold temperatures, and if they live at the top of the cold mountain now, there's nowhere left for them to go when the climate around them warms up.
These alpine meadows may look a lot different as the climate changes.
The wildflower suite that lives at this elevation is going to be lost to trees. The trees are going to fill the valleys and come all the way up the slopes.
If that happens, there are many things that live up here that may be out of a home.
Some of the impacts are inevitable, and people instead are talking about adapting to climate change. But that's where it probably won't be able to happen at the level of the species that are most vulnerable. And so there really will be potentially loss of species. And we don't know which ones, and we don't know how many. It's just a guessing game. Sorry, I'm making a fly.
It's the third day of the expedition, and I'm navigating some challenging terrain. This slope is thick with willow shrubs and other plants, sometimes up to my waist or taller. As I hike around with botanist Ken Marr, he shows me signs of tree line creep. That's one of the signs of climate change that Claudia mentioned earlier. When trees start to grow at higher and higher altitudes.
If you look up the slope here, you don't see any dead trees. So what that suggests to me is that trees have not been there very long. And by long, I mean maybe they've only been there for a few decades. So they haven't been there long enough to live and then die. Whereas we look down here, you see a few more dead trees.
As I follow Ken, he stops to gather more samples. The scientists have to gather as much as they can in just days. It will take months before they have them all identified and cataloged. They even send some of the more difficult spider samples to a lab for genetic work. So far, Claudia's feeling positive about what they've found.
We do all think that we got things that we didn't get the last couple of days, so we have had some new things.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Today is the last full day in this area before a helicopter is supposed to fly the scientists to a new location. But dark clouds start to move in, along with thunder, lightning, and rain.
We often get rained on, but I can't remember if we've had thunder and lightning.
I guess you can get anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. You just have to live through it.
The rain is coming down harder, so we head back. It's mid-afternoon by the time we're at camp, and it's torrential. Work stops, and we stay in our tents the rest of the day waiting out the weather. We've been here since Tuesday, and tomorrow is Friday, our pickup day. But Friday morning comes, and it's still windy. And there's a cloud nestled in our valley. Our helicopter can't land in these conditions. So a group of us squeezes into the cook tent, drinking coffee and hoping it'll clear. It's way too risky to hike up the slopes to gather samples. But it doesn't stop Claudia from thinking about all the work that needs to be done. We know so little about what's around us. So at this point, you know, we might be still discovering new species, but we don't know anything about their life history, where what they need, habitat requirements, what they eat. We just don't know that stuff. So there's lots of questions still out there.
The cloud doesn't lift. The rain continues, and the wind gets even stronger. The day drags on and on as we wait in our tents. We're stuck in camp, and the weather gets even worse overnight. The wind is so strong, it snaps tent poles and blows some tents over, including mine. I have to hop into another tent around 1 a.m. And by the next morning, everyone's expedition gear is soaked through.
Oh. How are you doing, Ken?
Okay.
Yeah.
Somewhat unexpected.
I mean, what this illustrates is mountain weather, unpredictable. Yeah. If it was going to get sunny right now, then we would just stay here and dry out. Under the circumstances, it makes a lot more sense to go to Tumbler Ridge, regroup, and hopefully Monday fly to another mountain.
When the cloud clears enough, the helicopter can finally land. But the forecast for the next few days is terrible, and everyone's stuff is drenched, so the rest of their expedition is stalled for the moment. But the work is far from over.
Molly Siegel reporting from British Columbia.